Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Phil Dierking and Katie Weaver. Later, Steve Ember will have our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Phil Dierking.
A new report says Europe leads the world in English language proficiency, followed closely by Asia. The Netherlands continues for the second year to have the best non-native English speakers, while Laos had the lowest English proficiency rate of any country. These are just some of the findings from the 2017 English Proficiency Index report. The private education company Education First, or EF, released the findings on Wednesday. This is the seventh such report produced by the business. It examined the English language knowledge and ability of adults in 80 countries. The results do not represent the English ability and language skills of everyone living in a country. They are instead the results of an online test called the EF Standard English Test, or FSET. More than 1 million people took FSET during 2016. You can take it online for free. The company has offices and established partnerships around the world. "We have 500 schools and offices in 54 countries," noted Min Tran, EF's director of research. "And in countries where we don't have a local office, we have a team of worldwide agents that help us recruit test takers."
In the latest study, Europe had the highest overall average of English language proficiency for any area. The Netherlands was at the top of EF's list, followed by Sweden, Denmark, and Norway. They each earned a very high proficiency rating and were among the top five countries in the world. The report said that European countries with high English proficiency ratings are alike in a number of ways. Often, their students are required to take English as a foreign language, beginning at the primary school level. The countries also use teaching methods that emphasize speaking over memorization of grammar rules. Finally, citizens of these nations are more likely to meet up with English speakers through travel or media contact than other areas. However, while Europe had the highest overall proficiency average, that average is not improving. The report notes that in many places, English proficiency levels are too low to be used effectively in the workplace. It adds that the rise of nationalist politicians and ideas may have an effect on how much effort European countries put into English learning in the future.
Adults in Asia rated strongly in English proficiency, which is why the area rated second highest in the latest study, after Europe. The most notable result is Singapore, which was the highest rated country for English proficiency in Asia, and had the fifth highest ranking in the world. This was Singapore's first time to rank in the top five. It was among the most improved Asian countries over the past year. According to Min Tran, one reason the rating for Singapore improved was the education system.
Singapore is hailed as one of the best education systems in the world, and they're able to get their students to do some of the most difficult things in schools academically.
He added that while all countries have some students who perform well, the difference with Singapore is that nearly all of its students perform at a very high level. In East Asia, Malaysia and the Philippines also rated high in English language proficiency, while Laos and Cambodia received low rankings.
This is the first year the EF report has had enough information to rate English proficiency in Africa. As a whole, Africa ranked just below the world average, but higher than both Latin America and the Middle East. South Africa ranked first on the continent and was the only country at the very high proficiency level. Libya had the lowest proficiency rating in Africa. One interesting finding was that women outperformed men on the test in Africa at higher rates than in any other part of the world. African women also had higher proficiency ratings than the global average for women. Min Tran noted that EF researchers examined data from only 5 North African countries and 4 countries south of the Sahara. He said they hope to gather data from more African countries next year. Latin America continues to rank low on the English Proficiency Index, with most countries falling into the low proficiency rating. Argentina is the only South American country with a very high rating, yet its proficiency levels were lower than last year. The EF report says that teachers in Latin America generally have low English proficiency levels. It says this lack of proficiency has an effect on their students. To increase understanding of English in the area, the report has 2 suggestions. Provide more training and resources to teachers, and offering employment to teachers with a better understanding of English. The one promising result the study found was that the proficiency ratings for most Latin American countries improved from 2016 levels.
The new report says the Middle East continues to be the lowest performing region in English proficiency. It was the only area to rank in the very low proficiency grouping, well below the world average. The United Arab Emirates was the highest scoring country in the area, and the only Middle Eastern country in the low proficiency category. But it was rated 57th in the 80-country survey. Iraq had the lowest rating for English proficiency in the area. However, almost every country improved over the past 12 months, with Saudi Arabia having the highest improvement rate of any country in the world. The report identified several reasons for the Middle East's low ratings. It noted that violence or conflict in some areas makes it impossible to develop or provide a strong education system for students. EF's Min Tran says, even in countries without conflict, the local education systems are not strong enough to provide quality English teaching.
While it's great to be able to send so many students abroad, the vast majority of students in your country are still going to be trained locally through the public school education system. what we've seen is so much of the country's English levels have to do with the quality of the public school education system.
He noted that EF has found a very clear link between the country's English level and the average number of years that a student spends in public schools.
The study had other interesting findings. In general, English proficiency levels among women were higher than those for men. On average, women in most countries were more educated than men and more likely to complete secondary school and attend college. However, the differences between the sexes appear to be getting smaller from year to year. Also, EF officials say English proficiency levels appear to be linked with innovation and economic development. Countries with better internet connections, investment in research, and service exports all have higher English levels. In addition, the higher a country ranks on the Human Development Index, the higher its English proficiency score was on average. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Phil Dierking.
Catalonia's effort to separate from Spain became more complex Sunday when the former president of the region, Carles Puigdemont, surrendered to police in Belgium. Puigdemont had fled to Brussels from Spain last week. Spain ordered the arrest of Puigdemont and other Catalan leaders. They are accused of rebellion. As Madrid seeks to stop the drive toward Catalan independence, similar movements, such as in Scotland, are watching with interest. On the streets of Scotland's biggest cities, Edinburgh and Glasgow, the Scottish flag has flown alongside the Catalan flag to show support for the separatists.
Scotland already enjoys some autonomy from Britain. The British government approved Scotland's plan to hold an independence vote in 2014. The Scottish people chose to remain part of Britain. Scottish independence supporter Chris Bambury is the writer of the new book, Catalonia Reborn. He said Spain's government should have treated Catalonia the way Britain treated Scotland.
Bambury said the Spanish Prime Minister may have been able to dissuade Catalans from seeking independence had he been more respectful of them. He said the government acted too strongly. That angered Catalans and intensified their support for independence. James Kerr Lindsay, a professor at St. Mary's University in London, agrees. If Scotland had voted for independence, we know that Britain would have allowed it. But Spain said absolutely no way. We're not even going to give that vote, he said. And, he said, the international community supported Spain's government because it did not want to deal with European problems.
Independence movements are taking place elsewhere in Europe. Italy, for example, saw two of its richest areas vote last month for more autonomy from Rome. In Belgium, tensions between the Flemish-speaking north and French-speaking south also may threaten the country. Kerr Lindsay said that other movements are troubled by events in Spain. The violence following the vote and the reaction of the international community demonstrate the difficulty in gaining independence. The European Union supported the Spanish government. However, Chris Bambury argues, History shows it is better to be sympathetic to people who seek independence.
Both Catalonia and Scotland are wrong to believe the EU will help them become independent, argues Kerr Lindsay. He said, the EU does not have the power to decide questions of independence. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Susan Shand.
We turn now to the making of a nation. Yesterday, we talked about the visits to the New World by Christopher Columbus and other explorers sailing for Spain and Portugal. Today, Steve Ember tells the story of the first permanent English settlements in North America.
England was the first country to compete with Spain for claims in the New World. Queen Elizabeth I supported explorations as early as the 1570s. Sir Humphrey Gilbert led the first English settlement efforts, but he did not establish any lasting settlement. He died as he was returning to England. Gilbert's half-brother, Sir Walter Raleigh, continued his work. Raleigh sent a number of ships to explore the east coast of North America. He named an area of the coast Virginia in honor of Queen Elizabeth, who never married and was known as the Virgin Queen. In 1585, about 100 men settled on Roanoke Island off the coast of the present-day state of North Carolina. These settlers returned to England a year later. Another group went to Roanoke the next year. This group included a number of women and children. But the supply ships that Raleigh sent to the colony failed to arrive. When help got there in 1590, none of the settlers could be found. At least some of the settlers may have become part of the Indian tribe that lived in the area. One reason for the delay in getting supplies to Roanoke was the attack of the Spanish Navy against England in 1588. King Philip of Spain had decided to invade England, but the small English ships, combined with a fierce storm, defeated the huge Spanish fleet. As a result, Spain was no longer able to block English exploration. England discovered that supporting colonies so far away cost a lot of money. So Queen Elizabeth took no more action to do it. Not until after her death in 1603 did England begin serious efforts to start colonies in America. In 1606, the new English king, James I, gave two business groups permission to establish colonies in Virginia, the area claimed by England. Companies were organized to carry out the move. The London Company sent 100 settlers to Virginia in 1606. The group landed there in May 1607 and founded Jamestown. It was the first permanent English colony in the New World. The colony seemed about to fail from the start. The settlers did not plant their crops in time, so they soon had no food. Their leaders lacked the farming and building skills needed to survive on the land. More than half the settlers died during the first winter. The businessmen controlling the colony from London knew nothing about living in such a wild place. They wanted the settlers to search for gold and explore local rivers in hopes of finding a way to the east. One settler knew this was wrong. His name was Captain John Smith. He helped the colonists build houses and grow food by learning from the local Indians. Still, the Jamestown settlers continued to die each year from disease, starvation, and Indian attacks. The London Company sent 6,000 settlers to Virginia between 1606 and 1622. More than 4,000 died during that time. Historians say that all the settlers surely would have died without the help of the local Powhatan Indians. The Indians gave the settlers food. They taught them how to live in the forest. And the Powhatan Indians showed the settlers how to plant new crops and how to clear the land for building. The settlers accepted the Indians' help. Then, however, the settlers took whatever else they wanted by force. In 1622, the local Indians attacked the settlers for interfering with Indian land. 340 settlers died. The colonists answered the attack by destroying the native tribes living along Virginia's coast. The settlers recognized that they would have to grow their own food and survive on their own without help from England or anyone else. The Jamestown colony was clearly established by 1624. It was even beginning to earn money by growing and selling a new crop, tobacco. The other early English settlements in North America were much to the north, in what is today the state of Massachusetts. The people who settled there left England for reasons different than those who settled in Jamestown. The Virginia settlers were looking for ways to earn money for English businesses. The settlers in Massachusetts were seeking religious freedom. King Henry VIII of England had separated from the Roman Catholic Church. His daughter, Queen Elizabeth, established the Protestant faith in England. It was called the Church of England or the Anglican Church. The Anglican Church, however, was similar to the Roman Catholic Church. Not all Protestants liked this idea. Some wanted to leave the Anglican Church and form religious groups of their own. In 1606, members of one group in the town of Scrooby did separate from the Anglican Church. About 125 people left England for Holland. They found problems there too, so they decided to move again to the New World. These people were called pilgrims. Pilgrims are people who travel for religious reasons. About 35 pilgrims were among the 102 passengers and crew on a ship called the Mayflower in 1620. The Mayflower set sail from England, headed for Virginia, but the ship never reached Virginia. It was blown far off its planned course. Instead, it reached land far to the north, on Cape Cod Bay. The group decided to stay there instead of trying to find Jamestown far to the south in Virginia. They settled what would become the Massachusetts Bay Colony. They called the colony Plymouth, naming it after the harbor in England from which they departed on their voyage to the New World. The Pilgrims and the others aboard the Mayflower believed they were not under English control since they did not land in Virginia. They saw the need for rules that would help them live together peacefully. They wrote a plan of government, which they called the Mayflower Compact. It was the first such plan ever developed in the New World. They elected William Bradford as the first governor of the Plymouth Colony. We know about the first 30 years of the colony, as William Bradford described it in his book of Plymouth Plantation. It is also sometimes referred to as William Bradford's Journal. It actually tells the story of the Pilgrims from 1608, when they settled in the Netherlands through the Mayflower voyage until the year 1647. It ends with a list, written in 1650, of Mayflower passengers and what happened to them. As happened in Jamestown, about half the settlers in Plymouth died during the first winter. The survivors were surprised to find an Indian who spoke English. His name was Squanto. He had been kidnapped by an English sea captain and had lived in England before returning to his people. The Pilgrims believed God had sent them Squanto. He made it possible for them to communicate with the native people. He showed them the best places to fish, what kind of crops to plant, and how to grow them. He provided them with all kinds of information they needed to survive. The settlers invited the Indians to a feast in the month of November to celebrate their successes and to thank Squanto for his help. Americans remember this feast when they celebrate the holiday of Thanksgiving Day in November. Other English settlers began arriving in the area now called New England. One large group was the Puritans. Like the Pilgrims, the Puritans disagreed with the Anglican Church. But they did not want to leave the church. The Puritans wanted to change it, to make it more holy in their view. Their desire for this change made them unwelcome in England. The first ship carrying Puritans left England for America in 1630. By the end of that summer, 1,000 Puritans had landed in the Northeast. Charles, the new English king, had given permission for them to settle in the Massachusetts Bay area. The Puritans began leaving England in large groups. Between 1630 and 1640, 20,000 sailed for New England. They risked their lives on the dangerous trip. They wanted to live among people who believed as they did. The Puritans and other Europeans, however, found a very different people already living in the New World. They were the Native Americans, or Indians, as Columbus called them, after thinking he had reached the East.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.